We'll start with case 6056. And after Conoco has presented its case, again, I will ask anyone anyone in the audience, if they want to ask a question or make a statement on the case, so you'll have an opportunity to do that. Go ahead, Mr. Bender.
May it please the examiner, Lawrence Bender, P.O. Box 400, Bismarck, North Dakota, appearing in this matter, case number 6056, on behalf of Raymond T. Duncan. At this time, we respectfully request that cases 6056, 6071, and 6072 be combined and consolidated for purposes of hearing. We'll have one witness for all of these matters.
Okay. Case 6071 is a proper spacing case to consider the further development of the Dickinson Lodge Pool Pool in Stark County, consider the field roof for that pool. Case 6072 is a motion of the Commission to consider prorating the production from the Lodge Pool wells in the Dickinson Field, the Canopic area, and the Klein area. So unless someone objects, we will combine for the purposes of hearing those three cases, 6056, 6071, and 6072. Okay, would the witness raise his right hand?
Yes.
You promise to tell the truth in these cases?
I do.
Thank you.
Steve, would you state your name for the record, please? Spell your last name.
Yes, my name is William Stephen Fallon. I go by Steve. You spell it F-A-L-L-I-N.
By whom are you employed and in what capacity?
Raymond T. Duncan in Denver, Colorado, and I'm the production manager.
And you're an engineer by education and training, is that correct?
That's correct.
Have you had an opportunity on previous occasions to testify before the North Dakota Industrial Commission?
Many times.
And have you had your qualifications accepted as that of an expert?
I have.
And in preparation for today's hearing, have you made a thorough study and review of all the pertinent matters that will be under discussion here today?
Yes, sir, I have.
And have you prepared or have prepared under your control and supervision certain exhibits that you intend to sponsor?
Yes.
Have you satisfied yourself as to the accuracy of those exhibits?
Yes.
Offer the further testimony of this witness as that of an expert.
Motion granted.
Steve, let's turn first to what's been marked as exhibit number one. Can you identify that exhibit and briefly highlight for us what's contained upon it?
Yes, this is a map of the what I'll call the Canopic area. It shows the wells that are existing there. We currently have five producing wells, one drilling, three permitted, one dry hole, and one other one that's to be permitted that I just gave to the staff yesterday. The map is on a 1:2000 scale. I should point out that the Koontz well is on the very north end of the map in section 2, and I consider, as Kevin Zorn with Conoco just said, that is a separate reservoir in my opinion. The map shows in blue the present Canopic area that was approved by the commission back in February at the hearing there, and what we're asking for here today is to extend it down further, which includes the, I'm not sure what that's pink or red or what that is, but that's the color, the reddish color there, which is the expanded area. And this map, the emphasis should be on the present area, the expanded area, because as I'll show later, actually in Exhibit 3, the pressure communication between the Klein and the Canopic, which I should point out right now, the Canopic is in the northwest of Section 11. And the Klein, which is 2.1 miles to the southeast in the northeast of Section 23, I consider positive proof that they're connected.
So then, Steve, it's your request that, well, let me back up. The area that's outlined in blue, that's currently within the field boundaries for the Dickinson Lodgepole Pool, is that correct?
That's correct.
And you're asking that the Dickinson Lodgepole Pool be extended to include the area that you have labeled as expanded Canopic area.
That's right.
Is that correct? And the rationale for that is you believe it's one common source of supply.
That's correct. And I'll show that on Exhibit 3.
Okay, let's go on to the next exhibit then.
Okay, Exhibit 2 is our recommendations from the information data that we've learned in the last several months here in drilling additional wells in the Canopic area. Recommendation number one actually is that map. That's what I'm asking, that it should be expanded to, and the map shows it visually. Number two is that we wish to, as of May the 1st, have all the wells in that expanded Canopic area outline, the reddish outline, to be held back to 500 barrels of oil per day, and that We also are asking that we come back here in 3 months to reconsider that number, that 500 barrel a day number. We might want to go up, we might want to go down. We don't know right now. There's going to be several more wells drilled in the next 2 or 3 months, and I think all the unit owner, not the unit owners, the working interest owners now in the area want to come back in 3 months.
Steve, while you're on this subject, I don't believe the commission is going to meet yet in April, and they probably will be meeting after the 1st of May. Would the operators voluntarily put the restriction on the 1st of May pending what action the commission takes?
We plan to. I don't think there's any question about that. We have, I'll just say about the 500 barrels a day, I know of no opposition from any working interest owner in that area right now. They might stand up here and say something different, but I don't know of any right now. Okay, number three gets into the gas flaring that you all have discussed several times already with the Coons area. We're asking that we be given another 60 days from May 1st to flare gas. If there's any major change, and by major change I'm talking about if something blows up with the negotiations that are currently going on, and I guess I should address that more than maybe Kevin Zorn should have.
That's not easy to blow up.
Well, okay. That's a little
fall apart.
Okay, if they disintegrate. I've been directly involved in the negotiation, and the reason for this request, and I should go ahead and talk about three. There's in the last sentence there is this gas plant. In the last days, several days here, there's been discussions, very serious discussions with Coke, with Petrol Hunt, and with the unit owners, the working interest owners here, considering doing their own gas plant installation in the area out there to get rid of this gas flaring problem that we obviously have upon us. The word gas plant is not correct at this point. I did this 2 days ago, and things have changed just as recently as yesterday. A gas plant is being considered. Coke is being considered, as Kevin Zorn said, and Petro Hunt, which operates the Little Knife gas plant, is also being considered. So there's three options here that we're looking at.
Steve, while you're on that subject, in any of the three options, whether it be Coke redoing their line so they can have the capacity and the compression, or a line to the Little Knife plant, or a portable plant being brought in, is the time schedule on those three almost identical?
Almost identical, and that's why Kevin alluded to towards the end of June. And we Duncan feels that, and I think we're far enough into discussions now with Coke, with Petro Hunt, and with our we call it our mini plant in the area. All three can be accomplished in 60 days from May the 1st. If it's not, and that's why I put the wording in here, if any major change in the gas line time and any change will be communicated to the commission so that you people know that we've got a problem, so that you can do something different. And what that is up to you guys. But right now, we think we can accomplish this by the end of June. The other thing that I'll allude to in a minute is because I'm asking that the oil rate be cut back to 500 barrels a day, that automatically will cut back the gas rate. Again, our GORs that we're looking at here is about 500 standard cubic feet per barrel. So that means at 500 barrel a day oil rate, we're talking in the range of 250 MCFD per well. That's roughly in that ballpark. So we'll automatically be cutting back the gas as well as the oil.
Maybe you could spend just a little bit of time talking about the restriction and the going to 500 barrels a day, how much of a cutback you're talking about, and how that will reduce the flaring. Just briefly.
Okay. We've got... it's not going to be a secret much longer. We got one well making 2,500 barrels a day right now. It's flaring in the order of 1.25 million a day. And that cutback then will automatically, May 1st, cut it back to 250 MCF a day. So that's a fivefold reduction. That's the best, I guess that's the worst example as far as flaring goes. There's others that are making not that much, but that's the relative numbers we're talking about. Some of these wells are flaring a million gas, and that's another reason why May the 1st we want to cut the oil rate back, because we need more time to study the reservoir. I think that's the main consideration, and then the gas flaring is a problem for all of us.
are you going to restrict the Rancho's well to 500 barrels a day when it gets online, or are you going to test it for a period of time?
Are we going to what now?
Test it for a period of time.
No, the thought, the recommendation here is that that all wells producing, so that's the Rancho's, that's any well that comes into this pool, puts a straw into this pool, will be restricted to 500 barrels a day. We can test these wells at 500 barrels a day, and that's a fairly reasonable amount of oil and subsequent cash flow to us. Number four is in conjunction with everything that's going on to properly manage this reservoir. We thought, and our partner thought, it would be prudent to get another pressure point at the end of June, like we did at the end of March. This time we don't need a 48-hour buildup, we need a 24-hour buildup.
Let's go on to the next exhibit.
Okay, I'll refer you on exhibit three, before you look at that, to go back to exhibit one. The connection, the interference test that was done was between the Klein and the Canopic, which are 2.1 miles apart. I referred to those earlier. At the time, the only well that was producing in the reservoir was the Canopic, and that was making it about 2,400, a little over 2,400 barrels a day at that time. What we did was we went into the Klein well, we perforated the well, we installed tandem quartz gauges at about 9,800 feet, and we had a pressure device down there to look to see what kind of pressure response we were seeing from a well 2.1 miles away. This graph is what we saw. You can see that we've got it corrected, or it's not corrected, and I know somebody might ask me, and I do have the corrected pressure point here, but our pressure is moving. We dropped 5.5 pounds in about 88 hours or so. This, to me, is a direct indication that the Klein is connected to the Canopic. There's no question in my mind. The other thing that happened here, you can see where I've got 5 hours shut in at the Canopic. We started having some water problems on the Canopic. We were doing some testing on the Canopic well, and about, I don't know, 10 hours or so after the well was shut in, back when it's about 44 hours, about 10 after that, hours after that, you see a change in the slope. That indicates to us that there's a direct link there, that there's something going on, because there was nothing else in the reservoir that should have been moving. So the thing that was moving was the Canopic was shut in for 5 hours. Because of the water production on the Canopic, then later at about 74 hours, we actually shut the well in for a workover that we did, and that's a reason that you see the flattening that's in between 80 hours and 87 hours there, 88 hours, it starts to flatten out. What's happening is there's no more fluid being pulled from the Canopic, no production, no 2,400 barrels a day, and so we start seeing a flattening in our pressure curve. This is exactly what should happen, and it was mentioned earlier on the Koontz well. If we were not connected, if the Canopic and the Klein were not connected, we should have seen a flat line, straight line. There shouldn't have been any drop like this. So I'm convinced, totally convinced, that we are connected, and that's the way we've planned all of our drilling activity around this well and subsequent future drilling that's going to be done. One other thing that I'd like to say, at the February hearing, we were asked to come in and discuss the pressure work that, again, Kevin Zorn with Conoco alluded to. That was done the 1st of April, the very end of March, as we had been requested. It was a 48-hour buildup. And what we actually did there, because we had just done this pressure work shown on Exhibit 3, the March the 19th, we left the Klein well producing. So we cranked it up after this shut-in, or after this, the pressure bombs were shown to be an interference test here. We put the well on production. So it was producing at about 2,500 barrels a day, and we shut in the other three wells that were in the reservoir at that time. And if you go back to Exhibit 1, we put pressure bombs, or Conoco actually put pressure bombs in the Cadermus up in Section 3. The Canopic had pressure bombs in it, and the Riddle had pressure bombs in it. And as Kevin Zorn has already mentioned, our data, within the accuracy of the equipment, we think that the reservoir pressure as of April the 1st was around 4,200 to 4,210 pounds.
So, Steve, while you're on this exhibit, how much oil was produced during the 80-some-hour period of time?
It's 4 days at 2,500 barrels a day, so around 10,000 barrels from the Canopic. Now, that you're talking about Exhibit 3 now, right?
Right. Yeah. During that period of time, I'm trying to relate it. I know what the drop is.
Yes.
The number of barrels per pound of pressure drop.
The only other thing that I guess I'd like to say about the, when we were here in February, we mentioned a number as far as how many barrels per pound drop we see in the reservoir. That number is very similar. We have better data now. We've got much more oil out. Not much more. We've got more oil out of the reservoir. I feel much more confident that the reservoir limits test that we did back in January on the Canopic is confirmed now. The number now that we're using is about 1,068 barrels per pound of drop, which is very similar to what we told you back in February. So not a lot's changed here as far as the size of the reservoir.
Steve, based on the pressure work that you've done out there, let's refer back to Exhibit 1. It's your opinion that the area that you have highlighted in pink should be included within what's been referred to as the Canopic area, is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
And it's also your recommendation that all the wells that are drilled and completed in the Canopic area and currently producing in the Canopic area, as of May 1, should be restricted to 500 barrels a day, is that correct?
That's right, that's right. I would also suggest that there still be the mild buffer around this, because there's still some things we don't know here.
And what, once again, what is your recommendation with respect to flaring, and why are you making that recommendation?
Because I think we will have gas in pipeline within 60 days. I'm hoping 45, but I'm telling you 60. And I feel confident of that because we've been under serious negotiations now for the last 2 weeks. I mean, at first you kind of work up to this, but we've really got the hard press on right now with the companies involved. And I think a decision will be made by all the parties involved here in the Canopic area within a week. I think it'll actually be quicker than that. But that's just to decide which company to go with.
And other than the production restrictions and your recommendations for flaring, you're not recommending any other change with respect to the proper spacing for this area, are you?
No, I think everything that was discussed before, we're fine with the setbacks, the 320 spacing, we're fine with that.
And Stephen, in your opinion, will the restrictions that you're recommending of 500 barrels a day, will it harm the reservoir in any way?
No, it won't. It'll assure us that we get our unitization process underway. I might even mention we're having a big unitization meeting tomorrow in Denver to start the process for this field. So I think all the partners are very serious about getting us unitized as quickly as we can. So no, it will help us actually to cut this back.
And you're also recommending that the commission take another look at this sometime in July, is that correct?
That's right.
Steve, there's also a matter of a well that was drilled in the northwest quarter of Section 24, the Ranchos 1-24 well, is that correct?
That's right.
And can you tell us about that well? Is that well drilled and completed?
Yes, it is. What I'd like to do here is discuss this a little bit, and I've got a couple more exhibits to pass out.
First of all, when was that well drilled and completed?
It hasn't been completed yet. The well has just been drilled. The drilling rig is still there. It's recent. I mean, in the last 2 weeks it has been down. Actually, we have logs and casing in the ground. What we're asking here is that we be allowed to put the Ranchos tank battery at the Klein location. And because of the permit, we need permission to do that, do that change.
Okay, let me pass out another exhibit that might help the commission follow along in that.
Right.
Thank you. Steve, I'm going to show you what we'll have the commission mark as exhibit number four. Can you tell us what that is?
Yes, this is the actual sundry notice permit that we received to drill the well. And again, what I'm asking for is that we be allowed to change what the permit says because the conditions have changed in the last month, actually last 2 months. So, and we need permission to get this permit changed.
First tell us what you want to change and then tell us what conditions have changed.
Okay. What we want to change is to item number two that's on the permit says the tank battery treater and flare pit shall be located on Al Berger's property as near as practical to the southwest corner of the property. Just to align you with where we are, you might look at the next exhibit. I'm getting ahead of myself here a little bit.
So we'll just treat the entire packet as exhibit four.
Okay.
Next page of exhibit four.
The next page shows a topography map, and I'm sorry for this. This came up at the last minute, and it's going to have to do, I guess, here. Where it says proposed location on there, that is the Ranchos drill site. And you can see on there, it says, or it doesn't say, but it shows some little dots there. That's supposed to be the tank battery. And what I need to do now is to go back and review the history of this to show you how things have changed for Duncan anyway, and why our recommendation is that we move the tank battery from where we've shown it on here and was agreed to with the state. That we move it now to the Klein location, and again I apologize that it's the Klein location is where the dark line goes to the west and then up to the northwest. That's the Klein location. And there's a tank battery there.
If you refer to exhibit one, it'll give a little bit more visual picture of the distance between the Rancho and the Klein line. Is that correct?
Yes. Exhibit one does at least show you the names. The history of what's happened on this permit, the location was in the western Rancho subdivision. We had a meeting with all the landowners out there on March the 6th of this year, where the state was there, Duncan was there, there were several people there. And from that meeting, discussion was held about where we were going to drill the Klein well. Subsequent conversations with Wes Norton and ourselves agreed to what you see here in the permit. I mean, we definitely agreed to that, no doubt about it. Wes Norton was very concerned about getting the tank battery out of the subdivision, as were we. It's not where we want a well to be located, but it was our seismic best location. So, and I think the other thing is we all wanted at least the tank battery somewhat hidden from people on the north end of the subdivision. The state per this permit and Duncan agreed to do this. The fact is that Duncan never talked to Al Berger about doing this. So we agreed, but the property owner had not agreed. Damages had already been settled with Mr. Berger, and he had thought all along that the tank battery was going to be on the drill site, as it is on most locations. And he wasn't at the March 6th meeting. He wasn't there. So, you know, Duncan is at fault by not telling him that the state and we had agreed per this permit to move the tank battery. The other thing was we weren't sure if we were going to get a well or not. It's the kind of situation where you don't want to stir up problems until they get there. When we told him what we wanted to do to move the tank battery to the east of his house, and again I'll refer you to the topography map, his house, it's kind of hard to see, from where the four dots are, which is the tank battery, his house is to the west, I'm going to say 300 or 400, that's more than that, it's like 700 or 800 feet. That's that little black dot that I put on there. He emphatically, when we first talked to him, said, no, I don't want it there. He has lots for sale out here, and he said that's going to ruin another one of my lots. You've already ruined one of my lots with the well site. I thought that's where the tank battery was going to be. I don't want to ruin another one. As I recall, that was a weekend, and we scrambled to look for an alternative place to do a tank battery with. and we think we've come up with that. During this same time period, we had partner meetings where we agreed with all the working interest owners in the area to cut back the rate to 500 barrels a day, which I've just got through recommending to you. So that was a huge change that occurred that we didn't realize when we agreed to this and agreed to the state permit, no doubt about it. So through the weekend, we said, why can't we take the Klein tank battery, cut it in half, and actually then put the Klein into part of the tanks and the Rancho synthetic the other part of the tanks. That would require us laying a flow line that's going to carry the oil and the gas, like I'm showing here on the fifth exhibit, or the last exhibit, over to the Klein tank battery. And we thought that was a very good idea because of the rate change, and that's, I'm trying to remember, and that was actually, the meeting that we had on that was April the 6th, so things are going through time here, and we agreed to that with partners at a meeting in Denver on April the 6th. The Klein battery currently has eight tanks there, eight 500 barrel tanks. One of the tanks is a water tank. The well, as I've already mentioned, has been making 2,500 barrels a day. I mean, it's a big tank battery. With the change going back to 500 barrels a day, you can see that the capacity of the storage there is plenty. There's no problem with flow rate from two wells. And again, this is all kind of predicated upon, and I assume that the commission will approve going back to 500 barrels a day May the 1st. And that's part of my assumption here. But we got plenty of storage. Okay, I now want to discuss what's going to happen if the Klein is different, because there is some impact. We plan no more tanks. We got plenty of tank room. As I've already mentioned, we will have to add a separator and a treater to separate the gas from the oil. And those are two fairly small pieces of equipment compared to 500 barrel storage tanks. So we will use the same flare line. We use the same water tank. So the only other extra equipment will be the treater and the separator. The oil will be pipelined out of this Klein area by May the 15th. Belfouche Pipeline is right now constructing, they're pipelining as we speak, and they've promised me that they will be done by May the 15th. So that will eliminate the oil trucks even from a cutback situation, because we're going from 2,500 barrels a day there now down to 500 barrels a day, and if two wells are there, it could be 1,000 barrels a day, but as of the 15th of May, the trucks will go away. The gas pipeline, I should mention, again, as we've already discussed, 60 days, and I've kind of beat that up enough, I think, but we're looking at, in 60 days, we'll have that connected. Gas flaring is a concern, and right now, that well, the Klein by itself, is flowing gas, or venting gas, about 1.2 million a day, which we don't like, but it takes a while to get gas hooked up. With the oil cutback and the two wells that could possibly be going in there, the Klein and the Ranchos, the gas rate will be 500 a day, so it'll be considerably less than what we already have right now. And hopefully that's again only for another 60 days. I want the reasons that I want to change it. We're going to do a whole lot less surface damage, for one thing. We won't have to build another battery. The battery site's already there. We're not putting any new tanks. The treater and the separator will be on the site already that's disturbed. Another excellent reason, I think, is we get the tank battery totally out of the subdivision. I'm not for having it in the subdivision, even if it's where we agreed to it with Wes and the state. It's still going to be in the subdivision. It bothers his property, and I don't like that still. The tank battery is really not needed right now. The tank battery is needed, but we don't need it up there at that location. We can utilize another facility and not cause any other visual disturbance or surface disturbance. The battery, if we put it up on Mr. Berger's property where the four docks there are, I personally think would be a temporary situation. When we unitize this within 9 months or a year, I think that'll be one of the first tank of the batteries that will go. Again, if we can lessen the surface damages, I'm all for that. If we have the tank battery on Mr. Berger's property, we're going to have to still lay a crude line and a gas line to that site to collect the fluids that we extract. And so that's more to damage, more surface damage for a crude oil and pipeline. If we move it to the Klein will then pick up two wells. I know from our land people that we now have right of way from two subdivision owners, Mr. Al Berger and Cleo Parsons, to lay this line as I'm suggesting to go from to the west and then to the north up to the Klein. We have their approvals to do the pipeline, and Mrs. Klein has agreed for us to come into Section 23 and do that work there too. So in summary, I think the history of this is there was a good faith effort by Duncan and the state to do the permit in the right way. The April 6th meeting with all of our partners wherein we agreed to cut back to 500 barrels a day totally changed my opinion of what's going on here as far as where the tank battery should be. And this, I'm mainly doing this because I think it's less than the surface damage.
Steve, one point you touched on that I think needs to be made just a bit more clear. It's true, is it not, that Mr. Berger does not want the tank battery where Duncan and the state has agreed to put it. Is that correct?
Yes. When first conversations with him were he wanted it back on the well site, which is in the middle of the subdivision, which we were really opposed to. He doesn't want it on his property. And I should say here, because he might be here, and if he is, he should speak up. Mr. Berger, in subsequent conversations after this one weekend where he said, definitely no, I don't want it here, and we looked at alternatives, he will let us put it there. It's going to cost us some money, which we can handle. That's not my concern now. My concern is, since the rate has been cut back, we don't need the battery at that spot. And I don't want to tear up a bunch of ground that I don't have to. So we can do it, but I think it's a more prudent thing to go the other direction with the flow line.
And when you talk about tearing up a bunch of ground, you're talking about having to create a site for the tank battery itself, is
that
correct?
Right.
Laying flow lines from the well bore to the tank battery,
that's
is that
right.
correct? And then a line out of the tanks into your sales line.
Actually two lines. There'll be an oil line and a gas line.
So you can eliminate a great deal of surface disturbance if you can move the oil directly
yes.
from the Rancho's well to the Klein battery.
That's right. That's right. One other point on the map, the topography map. This was my rendition, and it's the only copy I had up here with me in Bismarck when I got here. The actual pipeline route will be to the north of the Rancho's well and then go west along the there's a huge power line that runs through there, and that's about 300 or 400 feet to the north of Rancho's well. We're going to parallel that right away to stay away from Cleo Parsons' lots, from the middle of his lots. My rendition several days ago was just, as the crow flies. We're trying to work that out, and he has agreed to that.
And one more item, Stephen, and that's with respect to if you tie your Rancho's well into the Klein battery, because of your production restrictions, the amount of oil that will be produced into that battery and the amount of gas that will be flared until you're connected to a pipeline will be significantly less than what's happening out there right now. Is that
That's
correct?
That's correct.
That's all the questions I have for Mr. Fallon at this time. We'd offer exhibits.
Exhibits are received. Did that just cover the case 6056 or?
No, it was all the cases.
All the cases, okay. Questions from the staff?
Yeah, thank you.
Steve, on 100 barrels of oil per day restriction.
Yes.
That's, you actually are going to produce each well then at just 500 barrels a day. And the reason I ask is because I think the last time when you came in, the other restriction was a monthly average or a daily average, so it came out per month.
I think in terms of barrels per day, so, you know, I'm thinking in the range of 15,000 per month, or but 500 barrels a day is, I think that's how the previous order was 2,500 barrels a day. Is that right? I think it was.
Yes, but I think we talked about it that you could have produced it at a higher rate as long as you didn't go above a monthly allowable.
I don't have a problem with someone who's got a tremendous well producing 1,000, 1,500 barrels a day, and I don't know what the number is, to get production over for the first half of the month and be done. I'm concerned about flaring, and I'm concerned about pressure drop in the reservoir. So those two things happen whether you do it over the whole month or the first 10 days of the month. So am I answering your question?
I don't care, as long as
the 500 barrels a day for the month, the 30-day or 31-day month is adhered to.
Well, I guess I have to ask it again because it does make a difference, because you said how much, you've been saying how much gas you plan on flaring a day.
Right.
The tank battery. And if you're actually going to produce it at each well at 500 barrels a day.
Yeah. If we crank it up to 1,500 barrels a day, there's more gas coming out.
Right.
It's the same amount of gas, but it's a surge of gas. I'm with you.
So
I don't have any problem with 500 barrels a day. Our pumper's got to be out there anyway. And I don't know what other working interest owners would say, but I think what we agreed to was the 500 barrels a day. And I know there's other people here, so maybe they can speak their mind. 500 a day maximum cap is fine with me.
Okay, thank you.
I just have one question. The Rancho's well, you're proposing to put the tank battery on the line. Is the minimum interest the same?
No. Our plans are to cut the battery in half. They won't be connected.
They won't be connected.
No. The oil tanks will not be connected. Now, the water tank will be utilized, and so will the flare pit, but otherwise, everything's going to be separate. That's right. No, the mineral owners are different.
Okay. Steve, you were looking at one of your options there for a temporary plant right in the general area.
Right.
That'd be tying the gas into MDU's line once the liquids are stripped?
Yes. That's one of the three proposals that we're looking at right now. That's right. We'll be stripping it in the area because WBI has a major transmission line just about a quarter of a mile south of the, there's an east-west road here between sections 24 and 14. So, it's a huge line. We can get any amount of gas into it we want.
Who did you say had the main transmission line there?
It's WBI's transmission line.
Okay, MDU.
Yeah.
Yes. Steve, in your Exhibit 1, you have a pink outline of some land there. Is this your best guess of the outline of the oil pool that underlies that land?
That's a scary question. I thought I was right when I came up here and told you the blue outline, and now I'm at the red outline, and I don't know what I'll be here next time.
The question was, your best guess.
My best guess is that it could expand a little bit more. There could, because of, it could expand into 15, that's possible. Because of the Stephan 114 well, this is the well that I early on mentioned. This has not been permitted. We just gave the data to the state yesterday. It's going to have to be a directional hole, as you can see. That is not in any records yet. That's only on this map. If the Stephan well and perhaps the KR-114 in the northwest quarter of 14 would produce, there is a chance that 15 could be brought in. And that's why I early asked for a mile buffer. I still think we need that. There is a chance that this thing goes down into 25, but we need to see how the Patterson 124, which is the south location there in 24, we need to see that. We're learning as we go here. But as a best guess, I think we've got the main part of it, yes.
Okay. Okay, the purpose of this case is to set temporary spacing for this area. Now, you've said about extending the Dickinson Field.
Right.
320 acres. Do you think 320 acres would be effectively drained by a well in this area?
I have no doubt in my mind that 320 is the right way to go here. When I see an interference test as shown by exhibit number 3, and I can see interference from 2.1 miles away, I can do this with less wells, actually. But for unitization purpose and to do a water flood or a miscible flood, as has already been mentioned, more drilling has to be done. I think 320s is the way to go.
Okay. I think you've said that you feel that this pool is a common source of supply and not connected to any other.
That I believe.
Your best guess.
That I believe. I think the Coots is a different reservoir.
Now, would you have any objections? Your request is to extend the Dickinson unit boundary.
Yes, sir. That's
Dickinson
right.
Field boundary. Would you have any objections if the commission established a new field on this outline and with the same provisions?
I wouldn't have any objections because I think we've got the majority of it outlined here, and with the mile buffer that we usually get, I think our company would be covered here. It is a separate accumulation, pressure-wise. I wouldn't have any objections to that.
Okay. Like I said, just keep in mind that this is only a temporary spacing.
Well,
and if it develops farther, we can take care
right.
of that at the proper space.
Right.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. Steve, Mr. Parsons has informed us that there used to be a railroad siding. I believe it's in Section 11 where they loaded a lot of horses out years ago. It was called Eland. Would you have any objection if the commission broke this off and we named it the Eland Field?
I think that would be a great name. I just like calling it the Canopic area and the Coons area. We need to call it something and stick with it because we have trouble in our own company.
Okay.
Eland would be great.
Thank you.
Any questions? Yes, Mr. Bauer, earlier.
Not a follow-up question to Mr. Fallon, but in a brief response to Marvin's question, I can understand Mr. Reeves' concern about the flaring in this area. I think there other operators might have some operational concerns of only producing the well 500 barrels a day when they could produce all their production up front in a few days. So if there is any restrictions on those areas, I think we'd want to talk about just this area.
And I'd be agreeable to that. You know, we are aware of the subdivision. We have been for several months now. And if we want to cap the decline in the ranch as well, Duncan would go along with that.
Excuse me, sir. Would you come up and speak into the microphone? Tell us who you are.
Okay. I'm Leo Parsons.
Oh, good.
And it was my understanding on the telephone now, and dealing with Duncan, that you're going to put one line in there from Rancho's one over the Klein, and that will carry the oil and the gas.
That's correct.
And it will be separated at the terminal there at Klein.
At Klein. That's right.
It'll be two separate deals. I mean, the Klein will be over here, and the Rancho's will be over here. You'll use it.
Well, no, the only thing that will be on the Klein, well, there's no change on the Klein other than the treater and the separator that we have to put over there to separate the oil and gas from the Rancho's. That's the only additional equipment that goes over there. We will have one flow line like I've shown here on a map, and I don't even know if you've got, did you have the map?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, and the map is wrong, you know, because I pointed that out. We're trying to hug that power line right away, or easement there. But no, there'll be one line through there, that's all.
And oil and gas will go through there.
That's correct. It's a flow line.
Is there anyone else that would like to make a statement or ask Mr. Fallon a question?
Jeff Collins with Axum Resources. We are a working interest owner in Section 11, and we just want to say we support Mr. Fallon's recommendations on every item.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Well,
Art, you're getting up in years. I thought maybe you forgot you were going to ask a question.
Once my dollars do go up, I wouldn't have to work.
Get back to what's normal in North Dakota. I'd be out fishing, golfing, everything else.
What I'd like to comment about, and possibly ask a couple questions of Kevin Zorn about, is why we don't have the best evidence that's available presented at the public hearings to determine the right way to go on field spacing and well spacing and so forth. I've been before this commission for many years, and only as of late has the confidentiality statute of the state of North Dakota begin to merge with the public hearings that the citizens of North Dakota believe they're entitled to. I'll ask Kevin, is it clearly because of the confidentiality statute that we haven't seen geologic cross-sections, isopach maps and structure maps, logs from the wells, core analysis, and even possibly a brief glimpse of a seismic interpretation?
Now, this is Mr. Fallon. Mr. Bauer, you want to ask Mr. Fallon a question?
Mr. Zorn. That's the question.
I didn't plan on calling a conical witness for this case.
Pardon?
I didn't have any intention of calling a conical witness for this case.
Well, I thought we had merged. I thought we were in a position we were talking about all the cases.
My understanding is that we combined and consolidated case 6056, 6071, and 6072. Mr. Zorn might want to answer the question.
The question was presented. Is there anybody else to ask a question in this case? And really, my question relates to all of the cases.
I'm going to ask Mr. Zorn to come up to the microphone and to answer the question as best he can.
State your name for the record.
Are you finished with these three cases, really? Are you willing to combine the four now?
Well, you've asked your question. Mr. Zorn is here, and he'll try to answer it.
State your name.
My name is Kevin Zorn. I'm an engineer for Conoco out of Midland, Texas. Maybe you could answer your question one more time, Mark.
Well, what I said, Kevin, is that normally in the past years, when we came up for cases of this nature, field spacing, field rules, well spacing, determination of reservoir, and so forth, we presented the best evidence that we had available, which would include geologic cross-sections, isopach maps and structure maps, logs from the wells, core analysis, and so forth. But we have seen none of that type of positive evidence presented in any of these cases.
Well, I guess my response would be twofold. Number one, I mean, there's no question that the confidentiality issue is of a concern to Conoco, and I think that anybody that's kept up with the newspaper in the last 6 months could understand that. I mean, there's a very active exploration play going on right now in the Lodgepole in North Dakota, and Conoco is a player in that, and to the extent that we can make our recommendations to the commission to their satisfaction, we would like to keep as much of the information confidential, because it's a competitive situation in the Lodgepole, and that's I don't think that's that uncommon. It's common in every play that I've ever been involved with. The second thing is that we don't believe that information is necessary to prove our case in these hearings. Conoco presented that evidence at the temporary and proper spacing hearings of the Lodgepole Dickinson Field, and this case, as far as the Kuntz Reservoir area, which is the one that I testified to, was basically brought about to discuss production allowables. And to us, the best information that justifies that recommendation is the information that we presented, which is the pressure data. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's...
Well, it doesn't really answer my question, except you're relying on confidentiality statute. Otherwise, you would, state would require that you present this testimony, correct?
I think that might be a legal question, and I don't think necessarily...
I'm not asking legal questions. I'm not appearing here as a lawyer. I'm here as an oil and gas consultant.
Well, you can still ask the legal question whether you're a lawyer or not.
Just a plain question.
I'm going to object to the question. I think it calls for a legal conclusion.
I agree. The objections are sustained. Ask another question.
All right. We'll get down to the facts. You're establishing two separate oil fields. I haven't got a copy of the testimony that you presented, the evidence that you presented, so I can't see the field outline that you're asking for. Completely in the dark. Don't know because of that, probably, if I had a copy of the evidence. I'm not talking to you, Kevin. I'm speaking about the other three cases. I don't really know what sections you're including, what sections aren't being including. It's a guess around here, what's going on at a public hearing. You get a little tired of that. It seems to be existing all the time. I won't go into our personal contractual difficulties between Mr. Hill and Conoco, but I'm talking about it from the other standpoint. Let's get around to your testimony. Now, you stated that the Cadramus well in Section 3 was included in your pressure bomb test.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Examiner, are we opening that case again?
Well, did Mr. Zorn testify to that, or was it Mr. Fallon that testified on that?
I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to reopen it because I think I told Mr. Bauer that he would have an opportunity at the end of these hearings to ask questions, and I may have misled him, so I want to make sure he has a chance to do that. So.
Thank you.
That's correct. We did run bombs in the Cadramus 3-1.
Which indicated that the Cadramus was in communication with the NOPIC and the rest of the wells in the Elan Reservoir, that it's going to be called?
That's correct.
Okay. But not with Goon?
That's correct.
Is not the Cadramus well a poor well in quantity of production?
I guess by logical standards, it would be considered a poor well. It's an economic well. I mean, Conoco believes it's an economic well.
Could you release how many barrels a day produces, roughly?
Well, currently the Cadramus is on pump, and right now it's making about 80 barrels of oil per day and about 150 barrels of water per day.
Thank you. So it is a much poorer well. Therefore, wouldn't there be to really determine whether there is any communication, wouldn't you have to have a lot longer period of test than 48 hours when you're comparing communications between these big wells and this poor pumping well?
No.
You don't believe so?
No. You're relating, there's several reasons why the Cadramus 3-1 is a poorer well than the Canopic, for instance. And we believe that a 48-hour test is plenty of time to see communication. And I didn't bring those equations with me, but I could show you that, you know, based on the properties of the oil and the properties of the formation, we believe that if there was going to be pressure communication, it would occur within that time frame.
What I'm really trying to get at, Kevin, is what did you do? Did you have a pressure communication test between the Elan field wells and the Coon?
Well, there's really two things that we did. Okay, the first thing is, and I talked about it a little bit, and then Steve expanded on it in his testimony. We did, as a part of the commission order that came out in February for the establishment of revised field rules of the Canopic area or the Elan field, we did a pressure buildup test in the last week of March. And what we did in that test is at that time the Cadramus 3-1 was shut in. We had not installed the artificial lift equipment yet. The Canopic well was flowing, the Riddle well was flowing, and the Klein well in section 23 was flowing. We ran pressure bombs in the Cadramus, the Riddle, and the Canopic. And I think it was a Wednesday night. Wednesday night, the 23rd, I think, of March. We ran pressure bombs in all three of those wells that evening. The following morning at about 8 o'clock, we shut in the Riddle and the Canopic. Now, this was all being done at the time when we were just doing the completion on the Koontz. So the Koontz was not producing at this time. What we saw on the pressure buildup is what some of Steve's exhibits spoke to earlier. It's very obvious from the pressure transient work that the Klein, the Canopic, the Riddle, and the Cadramus 3-1 are all in pressure communication. You know, we shut in the Canopic 8 minutes after we shut in the Riddle. And that was just coincidence. Their pumper, we had agreed on 8 o'clock, and their, you know, watches were slightly different. That is very obvious on the pressure buildup of the Riddle, that 8 minutes after it was shut in, the Canopic was shut in. When all the wells were shut in, except the Klein, we continue to see a pressure drop in the reservoir. And since the Klein was the only other well producing in the field, that obviously means that the Klein is also connected with those wells. And that confirmed an earlier test that Duncan had done between the Klein and the Canopic. Completely separate from that, we did a pressure buildup beginning on April the 5th for 48 hours on the Koontz number 1-2. That pressure buildup and the RFT pressures that we took while we were logging it indicated that the reservoir pressure, the original reservoir pressure of the Koontz, was about 600 pounds higher than the original reservoir pressure of the Canopic reservoir. So even if we agree to disagree that 48 hours wasn't enough to see interference, you can't argue with the fact that the original reservoir pressure of the Koontz is 600 pounds higher than the original reservoir pressure of the Canopic area. So regardless of whether we had done an interference test or seen any evidence of interference testing, as a reservoir engineer, I can't think of a way, and in discussions with Duncan and our other partners, none of us can think of a way how that could be the case and still have those wells be in pressure communication. And so we really have two independent pieces of evidence to suggest, or basically to prove, that the Koontz is isolated from the Canopic area.
I agree. I didn't understand your test between the Koontz on the reservoir pressure.
I hope that clarifies a little bit better.
Reservoir pressure, yeah, that does. I'm not arguing on that. I would just add a question on how you arrived at it. I haven't got it clear, really, on the position of Conoco or Duncan. Clearly, I've heard Duncan testify as to a request for 320-acre spacing per well. Is that what Conoco's request is, too?
Yes, that's correct. And that I guess it maybe wasn't real clear, but we're basically recommending, in my exhibit, I think it was recommendation number 2, or it was either 2 or 3, that, let me get the exact. Under recommendation number 2 on exhibit number 3, I say field rules from NDIC order number 6932, other than the maximum allowable rate defined above, should remain in place. 6932 was the proper spacing order for the Dickinson Lodgepole field.
Okay, that's 320, yeah, all right. In your studies, Kevin, you believe that 1,000 barrels of oil per day should be the maximum production level for the next 60 or 90 days on the...
Until we have evidence to tell us that the... basically, the intent behind our recommendation is we want to get the Koontz reservoir area unitized before the reservoir pressure gets to 3,500 pounds. With the information I have available to me now, I think that we can accomplish that and still produce the wells at 1,000 barrels a day. Now, if we get additional information through new wells or new pressure surveys to indicate that that rate can either be increased or should be decreased, then, you know, Conoco will make that recommendation to the commission.
So your information that you have available to you that isn't presented to this hearing would indicate that the reservoir includes the south half of Section 35 and the north half of Section 2?
Yes, sir.
How do you extend that information into the north half of 35? Do you have a completed oil well there? The Stephan well?
I'm not saying it extends into the north half of 35. My recommendation is that it includes the south half of 35 and the north
half of 35. That's what I meant.
Yeah, the Stephan number 1-35 was drilled, and in fact we're perforating that well today. And we expect that by the end of the week it will be flowing oil. And based on the information, convincing evidence is the evidence from the repeat formation tester we did in the Stephan. We think that the Stephan and the Kuntz are in the same reservoir.
Yes.
So there will be, within 2 days or 3 days, there'll be a producing well in the south half of 35, which is a well that has already been drilled.
But to carry it from the well bore to the property line, is it in your professional expert opinion that the reservoir extends that far?
Well, exhibit number one is not a geologic map. Basically, we're just saying that we're outlining spacing units is what we're doing.
Okay. But that is your field boundary too, those two half sections, you know, for field spacing?
At this time, yes.
Okay.
I mean, that could change.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I didn't specifically mention it, but I think the same comment applies to what Steve said is about the buffer area, and that goes back to us suggesting to the commission that, you know, as we get new information, that we'll make that available to the director and his staff so that they can hopefully make administratively changes to this as we get new information.
So we sort of have a sort of a no man's land now existing except for the buffer zone on Section 3. Well, we've got it covered by, we got a mile buffer zone on the first unit, the most eastern lodgepole.
Well, and this whole area is covered by the spacing order number 6932.
I don't know the aerial extent.
The Dickinson Field outline includes
36.
I've got it. There's a. I'll just go ahead and read this into the record, I guess. And in order number 6932, which is the in the matter of the hearing called on a motion of the commission to consider the proper spacing for the development of the Dickinson Lodgepole Pool, Stark County, North Dakota. Redefine the limits of the field and enact such special field rules as may be necessary. This order was signed on October the 17th of 1994. And on order number one, it says the Dickinson Field is hereby redefined as the following described tracts of land in Stark County, North Dakota. In Township 139 North, Range 96 West, all of Section 5 and Section 6. In Township 139 North, Range 97 West, all of Sections 1, 2, 3, and 4. In Township 140 North, Range 96 West, all of Sections 8, 9, 10, 11, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, and 33. And in Township 140 North, Range 97 West, all of Sections 13, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 33, 34, 35, and 36.
Mm-hmm.
And all we're doing with these hearings is we're modifying the allowable portion of order number 6932 to 500 barrels of oil per day for the Canopic area and to 1,000 barrels of oil per day for the Kuntz area.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kevin.
That's the only question I have. I'd like to make a statement on behalf of the people that I represent. And as I stated before, just to make it for sure, Lewis W. Hill Jr. Estate, the South Hart Company and its associates, maybe not all of its associates, but quite a few of them, that we believe that 160-acre spacing per well would more adequately protect correlative rights and the prevention of waste in this area than to continue with 320-acre spacing. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Is there anyone else would like to make a statement?
My name is Bruce Lehman. I'm the Deputy Area Manager of the Bureau of Reclamation's Dakotas Area Office here in Bismarck, Post Office Box 1017. I don't have any specific questions for the witnesses, nor do I have specific recommendations or comments on the rules that are being considered at this time by the Commission. But what I would like to do, at the permission of the examiner, is to make a brief statement with regard to surface concerns that we have regarding our ownership and the obvious proximity of that ownership to the situations we've been addressing that are being addressed here today. It's okay to continue. Thank you. As I said, our Dakotas Area Office of the Bureau of Reclamation is the administrator of U.S. government lands associated with Bureau of Reclamation projects in North and South Dakota and northeastern Wyoming. And a particular concern here today is the ownership associated with Dickinson Dam and Reservoir, which is obviously very much involved in the oil and gas situation that's before the Commission here today. Our ownership includes around 2,500 acres of surface ownership in the vicinity of this oil exploration and development activity, of which 1,200 acres are covered by Dickinson Dam and Reservoir when the reservoir is at the top of its conservation pool and about 10,000 acre feet of water. Of greater concern to us, I think, than strictly the surface situation is the fact that the drainage area associated with the Edward Arthur Patterson Lake or Dickinson Reservoir comprises about 400 square miles of watershed, which I believe through the discussions here today and the descriptions of the locations of the wells and the activity, most of the activity is contained within that watershed. And therefore is a particular concern to the U.S. government and to the Bureau of Reclamation in particular in regard to the protection of that resource. The reservoir supplies a municipal and industrial water supply for the city of Dickinson, also supplies irrigation water for 400 acres of land along the Hart River. It's a very popular recreation site and provides fish and wildlife benefits. Bureau of Reclamation is required by its administrative capacity to fully protect and to fully comply with the laws and regulations associated with managing that facility, in particular the National Environmental Policy Act, the cultural resource laws, and in general the protection of that resource for the benefit of our customers and for the American public. And my purpose here today in coming before the Commission is basically to express an interest and to a desire to be a party of record in these types of proceedings. I would very much was very much interested in the limitations of this latest considered this issue that's before the Commission right now with regard to the this field or this pool reservoir of oil that's associated with the Rancho St. Klein sites, mainly because of the fact that the reservoir itself apparently, at least the west end of the reservoir lies above the what are being defined as the limits of that particular pool, I would think, at this point in time. We also have surface ownership concerns and stand ready and eager to cooperate with the mineral right holders and their agents in providing access permits and the necessary agreements to obtain access on the surface to those mineral rights. But also our requirements under our responsibilities and laws require us to comply with the federal regulations associated with the National Environmental Policy Act and cultural resource laws. And I think we've had communications already with some of the entities in this room here today with regard to our responsibilities. I think that's been well communicated, and we've had some good discussions in that regard. But that's basically what I would like to say for the record here. As I said, I don't have any specific questions. I'd be glad to try to answer any that might be addressed to me. Other than that, I appreciate the opportunity to make this presentation.
You're welcome. Is there anyone else? Anything further from Duncan Energy or Conoco?
Nothing further.
All right, well, that concludes the hearing in cases 6071, 6072, 6056, and case 6070. And we will now break.